Yeah, we could. We could.
I always get bothered with the noise with the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're happy running around the house, but I don't know that we wouldn't hear them in this room, too.
Last time, before Pesach, what we've done so far with Avraham is we followed his travels and showing how his travels were really centered around Yerushalayim, trying to get to Yerushalayim. We talked about that. And what we did right before Pesach is we focused on his descent to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, and then his leaving Egypt, and we showed how that was symbolic of the future of the Jewish people, and then we tied it into Pesach, which is why we talked about that right before Pesach. What I'd like to do tonight, and I don't know that we're going to finish this tonight, but I'd like to do tonight, and as I mentioned several times with Avraham Avinu, we have several themes and strands to follow along, and we have to go back to the beginning and follow a different one, because there's so many, it's so multifaceted, and so many different points that we have to make with Avraham and Sarah and what goes on, because this is our foundation. This is what we're all about. And the more we know about it, the more empowered we are and who we are. And so we have to now go back to a new strand. And what I want to start following, and this actually is significant for Shavuos, is who is Lot? What is with this with Lot? Not so much who is Lot, but Lot and his relationship with Avraham. Let's talk about that a little bit. We've already discussed that Avraham and Sarah were related before they were married. Anybody remember what their relationship was?
Cousins.
Not cousins.
Not cousins.
She was his niece. She was his niece. And Lot? Was his nephew. Sarah's brother. Sarah's brother is Lot. Their father, Haran, was the other one to get thrown into the fire. Avraham came out alive. Haran was not so fortunate. But their father did show, as we said, some degree of self-sacrifice for Hashem, and he actually lost his life for Hashem. Back at the end of Parshas Noach, which is really where Avraham's story picks up, we find on page 52, the first mention of Lot. Page 52. I'm sorry, it's easier with the table. On page 52, we have in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, it's 31. Vayikach Terach es Avram beno. Terach took Avram his son. Ve'es Lot ben Haran ben Beno, and Lot, the son of Haran, the son of his son. In other words, Lot, his grandson. And then also, Sarai Kalaso, Sarai, his daughter-in-law, Eshef Avram Beno, the wife of Avram, his son. And they went together to Ur Kasdim. They left Ur Kasdim to go to Eretz Canaan. So there is Lot. So Lot is mentioned here as part of the group that left Ur Kasdim to travel to Eretz Canaan, but along with everybody else, didn't get there. Vayavou ad Haran vayeshvu sham. They got as far as Haran, and they dwelt there. Remember, we talked about how even before Hashem tells Avram to go to Eretz Canaan, already his father Terach is focused on the place Eretz Canaan. And we talked about how it was like a beacon, like a homing signal, like that you have Eretz Canaan being the place where you can get the closest to Hashem, and those who were looking to get close to Hashem found the land of Canaan. And Terach already demonstrates an interest in getting close to Hashem, and so he's focused on it, and he's moving towards there, but he doesn't get all the way there. He only gets as far as Haran, which is about halfway there, and stops. Avram, in Parshas Lech Lecha, picks up where his father leaves off, and he and his wife, Sarah, move on to Eretz Canaan. But Lot goes with them. So Lot overcomes that where Terach stopped. Lot is willing to continue on, along with his uncle Avraham, uncle and brother-in-law Avraham, his sister Sarah. And he goes on to Eretz Canaan. So Lot is really part of the group. Lot so far is very, very much a part of Well, you don't want to call it the Jewish people because it's not a Jewish people yet, but part of the family that is forging the people of Hashem, the Jewish people. And that's what happens on page 54 when you start Parshas Lech Lecha. In Pasuk Dalad, verse 4, Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem. Avram went as Hashem had spoken to him. Vayelech ito Lot. And Lot goes with him. So Lot is with Avram. And in the next Pasuk, hey, Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto. Avram took Sarai his wife. Ve'et Lot ben Achiv. And Lot, the son of his brother. Ve'es kol rechusham asher achash. And all the wealth that they had amassed. And all the people, and they went from Haran to the land of Canaan. So Lot is very much a part of this migration of leaving everything behind and moving on, to his credit.
Because of the wealth that he seems to be back-oriented.
Not yet. We are going to find that Lot is attracted to wealth, but at this point, we don't see anything about that. We just see that Avram took everything that was his, and Lot went along with him. So Lot, to his credit at this point, is we see has done more than his grandfather Terach. Terach only got as far as Haran, but stopped. Avraham and Sarah move on. Lot goes with them.
It doesn't say why he stopped.
We have to conclude that he had a certain yearning for spirituality, but it only went so far. Now, we then know that, as we mentioned in the last meeting we had, that Avraham is challenged, that there's an immediate famine, and he has to go down to Egypt. And in Egypt, Sarah is taken, Sarah is miraculously saved, and then they are thrown out of Egypt, and they now go back up to Eretz Canaan. From Egypt, they now move back north up to Eretz Canaan. So, if you turn the page to 58, the beginning of the 13th chapter. Well, you'll see, let's see, page 58. Vayal Avram in Mitzrayim, I'm reading verse 1. Avram went up from Mitzrayim, who? The Ishto, the Chol Asher Lo, he and his wife and all that he had, the Lot Imo, and Lot with him, Hanegba to the south of Eretz Canaan. So apparently Lot was with them. Now, Lot was there in Egypt. This is extremely significant that Lot was with them in Egypt. As we will find later, Lot did the one, besides going with Avraham, which he did when he left Haran and went to Eretz Canaan, besides that, the one other heroic act that we find Lot does before the meeting with the angels in Sodom. Until that point, until that fateful night of the destruction of Sodom where he invites in the angels. But until that point, the only other known heroic act that Lot does is right here on the way down to Mitzrayim. It doesn't tell us what happened in the Psukim, in the verses, but we know from the Medrash what happened. What did happen? Well, Avram said that Sarah was his sister, not his wife. Lot knew the truth, and Lot kept his mouth closed. Now you'll say, big deal. But you see, had Lot spoken up, and Avraham would have been killed, not only would Lot have gotten everything that Avraham has, because he would have been the only heir, Avraham had no children, Lot is a nephew, so Lot would have been the heir to all of Avraham's wealth. But more than that, the Egyptians would have rewarded Lot just as they rewarded Avraham. When they thought that Avraham was Sarah's sister and Paro took Sarah, he showered Avraham with all kinds of gifts and wealth, etc., because of being the brother of Sarah. Had Lot told them that Avraham was really the husband and Avraham would have been killed, Lot would have been the recipient of all that wealth. So here we see, and as was already pointed out, Lot seems later on to have a very strong affinity for wealth. But here he does not give in to that desire to give up, to gain that wealth at the expense of his uncle Avraham. And so Lot is remembered for good for what he did over here. Now, where is he remembered for good? Later on, with the destruction of Sodom. And as we know, Lot was saved from that destruction. This is what got him saved. Because it says over there, God remembered Avraham and saved Lot. God remembered Avraham and saved Lot? God remembered Lot and saved Lot. No, the Medrash says, God remembered what Lot did for Avraham and therefore saved Lot. And what did he do for Avraham? He kept his mouth closed over here and did not say that Sarah was really Avraham's wife. So Lot here is demonstrating some great things. He seems to have a good character. He seems to be along with Avraham, going through the trials and tribulations of the traveling from Haran to Canaan, then from Canaan to Egypt, Egypt back to Canaan, etc. And then we know that Lot and Avraham part ways. And that is right here on page 58. Now, verse 5. Hey. V'gam l'lot ha'holech es Avram ha'yatzonu v'akar v'oholim. And also to Lot, who was traveling with Avram, he had sheep and cattle and tents. V'lo nasa'u sam ha'aretz l'ashem es yachdav. The land did not support them, that they should dwell together. Ki ha'yan rechusham rav. For their wealth was very much, and they could not dwell together. And there was a fight, an argument, between the shepherds of the cattle of Avram and the shepherds of the cattle of Lot. And at that time, the Knani and the Prizi, different nations, were living in the land. And so, Avram says to Lot, Al nasim riva bein you veinecha, let there not be a fight between me and between you, uvein roi uvein reecha, between my shepherds and your shepherds, ki anoshim achim anachtu, we are brothers, we're related. Haloch al haaretz lefanecha, all the land is before you, hipared na me'aloi, please separate from me, im hatzemo ve'imina, if you go south, I'll go north, v'imayimin v'asmi'ila, and if you go If you go north, I'll go south, and if you go south, I will go north. And then, if we turn the page, Vayisa Lot es einav, Lot lifts up his eyes, Vayar eis kol kikar hayardin, he sees all the plain of the Jordan, Yichula mashke, that it's all mashke means it's watered, meaning that there's a lot of vegetation. Lifnei shachet Hashem es Sodom es Amorah, this is before God destroyed Sodom and Amorah, Kinyan Hashem, like the garden of Hashem, like Gan Eden, Keretz Mitzrayim, like the land of Mitzrayim, Bo'achatzor, as you come to Tzohar. Vayim Chalot Lot, Eiz Kol Kihar Yardin, so Lot chooses all of the plain of the Yardin. Vayisa Lot Mikenem, Lot traveled from the east. Vayipardu Ish Me'alachiv, and they separated each man from his brother. And the verses go on, where Avram dwelled with them, actually let's read two more verses so we can get the picture here. Avram Yashav Beres Kenan, Avram dwelled in the land of Canaan. Lot yashav v'arei akikar. Lot dwelled in the land, in the cities of the plain. Vayehal ad Sodom, and his tents went all the way up to Sodom. Ve'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chatoim v'Hashem me'od. And then the pasuk narrates to us, but the men of Sodom were evil and sinners to God very much. And that apparently did not deter Lot from having his tents go all the way up to Sodom. This separation, this parting of ways between Lot and Avram is extremely significant. It's far more than simply they split up. The Torah takes pains to relate to us all that happened, how they had been together, how then there was a fight, how Avram said to Lot, let's split up, let's not have a fight. You go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north. And Lot lifts up his eyes and he sees the plain and Lot says, I'm going to take that one. He goes there, Avram goes there. And the people of Sodom are very evil. The Torah is taking a lot of words over here, taking a lot of time, a lot of ink, to tell us about this separation because it means a lot. You see, up until this point, Lot has bought in to the system. Remember we talked about how Avraham is forging that main trunk, that center of history. He's the one, he and his descendants, are going to be the center stage of history. Lot has the opportunity to be 100% part of that. Remember we talked about how it didn't have to be one family. It could have been many families that could have been the main trunk, that could have been the center stage of history. In the end, it was only one family. In the end, it was only our patriarchs and matriarchs. Only us. But it could have been more during the first 2,000 years of creation. Lot had that opportunity to be part of that trunk. And there would have been another family, even though it's true he's related to Avram, he's a nephew, but he could have had his own children be part of this center stage. And this is where it breaks down. He's doing a great job until here, but at this point, Lot moves off. Now, Lot got further than anybody else got. Terach didn't get quite so far. Haran, Lot's father, didn't get quite so far. He was killed. Nachar, the third brother, Avram, Haran, and Nachar doesn't leave even Ur Kasim. He doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't get as far as Lot gets. But Nachar's granddaughter and great-granddaughters join the Jewish people. His granddaughter is Rivka, and his great-granddaughters are Rachel and Leah. So we do find his descendants entering the Jewish people, but he doesn't quite make it himself. Lot gets as far as anybody gets. After Lot, the only people really left who could have made it but didn't are the direct descendants of Abraham and Yitzchak, meaning Yishmael and Esav, who really could have been part of the whole system, but they chose not to be. But they could have been. But that's already descendants of Avram, descendants of Yitzchak. But non-direct descendants, Lot gets the furthest of everybody. The fact that he got this far means that Lot has grabbed hold of spirituality to some extent. Lot has, to some extent, become part of that main trunk. Not to the full extent, but there's a lot there that Lot has already grabbed onto. He's very close, but not quite there. And therefore, within Lot, Lot carries within his genealogy a certain connection to spirituality that the rest of the world does not have because of his connection over here. And that is why Lot's descendants do join the Jewish people in a very significant way. And who knows what that is?
Ruth,
and also Naama, that he's...
Is this a Yid that we talk about?
You can say it that way. You can say it that way. He's not a Yid. He's not
no,
a Jew.
But that's
right. He's got something there.
And is this where Torah introduces free choice?
Well, free will is already back from the Garden of Eden.
So much one family here and the other there. He just couldn't overcome his desire for material things. Being in today's world, you know, where the choices become...
Back then...
They should be difficult, but they become difficult.
All the choices are there, then and now. But what we talked about is that back then, the choice was to become part of the center stage of history. Now, we're locked in. We are the chosen people. We are the center stage of history. Everybody else is not. They also have free will. But their decision-making is not as significant as our decision-making. When anybody in this room makes a decision about right and wrong, which almost all of the decisions have to do with right and wrong, right? So any decision we make every day about right and wrong, that is a much more significant decision than the rest of the world when they make decisions about right and wrong. Even though it matters also what they do, but it doesn't matter as much. Why? Not because of what we did, but because of what our ancestors did. Because at the time when you could buy in to being the main part of history, they did. Lot almost did, but he didn't quite make it. But he carried within him that connection. Yeah.
The area that Lot chose, is that part of Canaan?
It sounds from the verses that it's not part of Canaan, but it's actually where the Dead Sea is. The Dead Sea, that's the Sodom area. Exactly what part of it, I'm not sure. But that's the area of Sodom.
But
So he's in.
I'm wondering whether that's part.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where the borders go. The land of Israel, the biblical land of Israel, it's for sure part of, because the biblical land of Israel includes today's Jordan. Today's Jordan and today's Syria and today's Lebanon are all included in biblical Israel.
Okay. So that the fact that Abraham gave Lot first choice, Abraham either way would still have been in Canaan.
True. Okay. True. Abraham would not have gone all the way to Sodom. See, even Lot, at first, you notice, he doesn't actually enter Sodom. It says his tent went as far as Sodom. Lot was not concerned enough to stay away from Sodom. Lot didn't want to go live in Sodom, because even Lot understood they're evil people. You don't go live in a city with evil people. But I'll go up until Sodom. It's later on that we find that he's living in Sodom, because the barriers broke down. As you all know, that once a person moves away from the source of Torah, which case is, this case is Avram, then he begins to slowly deteriorate. And first he's only willing to go until Sodom, and then we find him actually in Sodom. And in fact, when we actually do encounter him later on, not only is he in Sodom, they actually made him a leader of Sodom. They appointed him to be one of the ruling bodies of Sodom. So he's become very much, it's a far cry from where he had been with Avraham.
I spoke to somebody some time back who was from birth, and he said, and he'd gone away from the observance. He said his first act of defiance was sitting in his room on Shabbos afternoon and turning the lights on and off. That's his first
one. That was just a defiant act.
Yeah.
Here, I don't think it's defiance. I don't think it was a rebellion. But I think that it just deteriorated. You know, if you're not, there's no such thing as remaining the status quo. That we don't believe in. A person is either moving up or moving down. That's just the nature of this world. You can't. This world is a moving world. It's a changing world, and every second is different than the one before. And so, if a person is not actively trying to improve themselves, the natural tendency is to slowly drop. And so that's what happened with Lot.
Yeah. Verse 7, when it's talking about the idea of fall, and also
says yeah. Okay. So Rashi tells us that. What was this argument? We have to discuss this anyway. What happened over here? What was this? Where was the breakdown? And so, Lot now was in Israel. God had appeared to Avram and told him, "This land is going to be your land." Lot reasoned as follows: you know, Avram is old, and Sarah is old. They have no children. They're not going to have any children. So, if God is promising the land to Avram, who's going to get the land? I am the closest descendant to Avram. Not only am I the closest descendant to Avram, but I'm the one who's come along with him. I've gone through some of the trials and tribulations. My father was thrown into the fire along with my uncle Avraham. I traveled along with him to Canaan. I went to Egypt. I'm part of this. And so Lot reasoned, this land is going to be my land after Avraham dies. I'm the next in line. And so his shepherds acted like it was their land. They were willing to let their cattle and sheep graze without any restrictions, regardless of who currently owned the land. They let their cattle and sheep graze in other people's fields.
Presumably Lot already has daughters at this point.
Presumably he does. Avraham's shepherds are instructed not to let the sheep and cattle graze in other people's lands, because God said the land will be yours, but it's not mine yet. And if it's not mine yet, it's not my business to take what belongs to somebody else. That creates the fight. The Torah tells us, that's why it points out in verse 7, as you mentioned, V'aknani v'aprizi azoshev baretz. The Canaanites and the Prizi were still there in the land. You can't go use what belongs to somebody else. It's true you may get the land later, but you can't use it now. And in fact, Lot was wrong. In the end, Avraham and Sarah do have a direct descendant, and Lot does not inherit Avraham. But that was the source of their disagreement. And so, again, we see Lot's affinity for wealth and materialism and the ownership of the land, which is premature. And that precipitates the breakup between Avraham and Lot. Avraham says to Lot, let's not have a fight. You notice, he doesn't want the fight. Don't have a fight. That's the worst thing. Now, Avram could have said, you know, it's very, very important that Lot be connected to spirituality. I don't want him to go away. If he goes away, we're not connected anymore, and I'm his source of spirituality. But Avram said, let's not have a fight, because fighting is the worst thing. Because the fighting is going to destroy everything. That we can't have. Any connection to spirituality is more than compensated for, I don't mean compensated, but more than destroyed by the argument, by the fight. And therefore, it's not worth it. Let's separate. You go you one way, I'll go the other way, but I won't be far away. I'll be around, Avram says to Lot. I'm not going to go to another country. I'll be around, and if you get in trouble, I'll be there to save you, which in fact happens later on. And so here, they separate. Now, there's a very significant thing that happens after that, after they separate. Again, on page 60, verse 14, which is where we left off. V'Hashem Amar El Avram, and Hashem said to Avram, Acharei Hipared Lot Me'imo, after Lot separated from him. Sana Inechu Re'ei, lift up your eyes and see, Mihamakom Asher Atasham, from the place that you are there, Tzafona V'Negba V'Kedma V'Yama, north, south, east, and west, Kol Aret Asher Ataro'ei, all the land that you see, L'cha Etinena U'Lezarecha, I will give it to you and to your children, Ad Olam, forever. I will make your children like the dust of the land. That if anybody could count the dust of the land, so will your children be. Why does the Torah tell us that Hashem appeared to Avram after Lot separated from him? Well, anybody reading this would know that it was after Lot separated from him. We just read, Lot separated from him, and then God speaks to Avram. Well, of course it was after Lot separated from him. Why mention that it was after Lot separated from him? Clearly the Torah is making a point that it is because Lot separated from him that God appeared to Avram with this prophecy. Because Avram and Lot separated, that gave license for this new prophecy. Why is that? Because as long as Lot was subservient to Avram, as long as he recognized his place as being the recipient of spirituality from Avram, and following Avram's lead, then he belonged. But once he began to take matters into his own hands, then he already didn't belong. And what that caused is that Avram himself was affected. Because when you're connected to someone who is not acting properly, you can't delude yourself into thinking that it doesn't affect you. It affects everybody. Just as when we are in contact with people who need spiritual guidance, it helps them dramatically that we are in contact with them, but there's an effect the other way too, and it can drag us down as well. Here, Avram was being dragged down by Lot. Once he separates from Lot, now God appears to Avram and says, oh, this whole land will be yours, every direction, you'll have children, they will inherit the land, etc. From here, it's very important to note, and this is something that one of my rabbeim pointed out in high school, is that when we are trying to affect other people, which is a great thing, we should, and we are trying to do kiruv, we're trying to bring people closer to the Torah and closer to Hashem, it's something which every Jew has that responsibility. We all have the responsibility of helping other Jews who are less fortunate than us and knowing the truth to bring them closer. It's all of our responsibility. But we can't do it at our own expense. We can't do it and say, well, I got to bring them closer no matter what happens to me. You got to be careful on where you stand. And so a person has to know every time there's an interaction, the effect goes both ways. Every time there's interaction with anybody, you influence them and they influence you. And so a person has to make sure that the influence is always much more from you to them than from them to you. And so there are many applications of this. For example, one is not going to influence 100 more than 100 influences the one, right? If you're outnumbered, then you're not going to be very effective. Yes, you will have influence over them, but they will have a greater influence over you than what you will have. Or another example is, where is the interaction taking place? If it's taking place on your territory, in your home turf, where you belong, then your influence will be stronger than their influence. But if you go to where they are, then it's much harder. Their influence is much stronger. So it's something a person has to take into account when they're trying to influence others, to be careful which way the influence is going. Here, Avraham and Lot, once Lot begins to pull away from Avraham, it actually affects Avraham and drags him down a little bit. When they separate, then Avraham is back to where he was before. And that's a lesson that is brought out from over here. Okay, so Lot now separates. Avraham is back in business, everything is going well. And we're immediately in chapter 14, Perek Yudalet, introduced to the war between the four kings and the five kings. And we talked about this a little bit. We have this war. The four kings beat up on the five kings. They are a very, very powerful fighting force. And they take Lot. They conquer Sodom, and they take Lot. So we talked about this a little bit, how their whole aim was to take Lot. That was their goal, was to take Lot, because they were against Avraham and his spirituality. We talked about this when we talked about Avraham being thrown into the fire, because we pointed out that one of the four kings is Amraphel, who is none other, anybody remember? Than Nimrod. And Nimrod was the one who threw Avraham into the fire. And so here, in the guise of Amraphel, along with three other kings, they now come to take Lot, and in that way, in some way, attack Avraham.
Why do all these people have so many different names? Is this like a Russian novel?
A name in the Torah always is meant to bring out the essence of the person. Always. Anytime you find a name in the Torah, it's always meant to tell us something about the person. So the more names a person has, then the more there is to the person. The more multifaceted the person is. The more dimensions the person has. So Yisro, we know, Jethro, had seven names because he was a fascinating person. He had much, his character was very rich, and there was a lot there. He was a person who had worshipped every single religion and then found Judaism. And that's a person, he'd be a very interesting person to meet, wouldn't you think? He had seven names. Moshe had 10 names. 10 names for Moshe. They're listed in Divrei Hayamim and Chronicles. He had 10 names. Because Moshe, of everybody, was very multifaceted. And Moshe had all kinds of aspects to his character, to his personality. And so a name brings out the essence of a person. What, in the examples of Yisro and Moshe, it's all positive. Mm-hmm. But sometimes with the Rishayim, with the evil ones, they can have many names, all connoting different aspects of evil.
Do we know what that means?
Amraphel? Amraphel is a contraction of the words Amar, pull or pel, which means he said, throw. He said, throw Avram into the fire.
What was Nimrod?
Nimrod means rebellion. So when it's discussed with the tower, with the Migdal Babel, the Tower of Babel, there he's called Nimrod. He's the rebellious one, the one rebelling against God. Here, where he's coming to take Lot, he's spoken of as the one who threw Avram into the fire. Because that's why he's taking Lot, because he has this vendetta against Avram. You imagine how embarrassed he was, how shamed he was? He's got this huge fire, and he makes this decree, if you don't bow down to idols, if you're not involved with idolatry, you get thrown into this fire. Avraham, he has the audacity to destroy the idols, and Nimrod, throw him into the fire. They throw him into the fire, and he comes out alive. He comes out unscathed, unsinged. It must have been an incredibly embarrassing moment for him. He's got this, right? He's got this vendetta against Avraham. He wants to get him. He has an anger of revenge. And so here he's known as Amraphel.
Well, who is he? He says Moshe has 10 names. Who gave him those names? And how did he come to find them?
That I don't know. I assume that the Torah itself gives him the names.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm assuming. We know that his name was not Moshe when he was born. That name was given to him by the daughter of Paro when she took him out of the Nile. That the Torah itself tells us that when she pulled him out of the Nile, she said, "Kimi namai mishisihu," that has pulled him out of the water. And as the commentary said, the reason why that was the main name that he had is because just as he was pulled out of the water, so too he was going to pull the rest of us out of Egypt. And that became his essence.
Because I know a lot of people in modern times have many names, long names, and often it has something to do with their grandparents,
right.
And that is the essence of them, the background.
Right. right.
And how they were, came to be the person
right.
that you are today, influenced by all those
right.
generations before them.
Right. When we give names, when we give names, our hope is that the children will live up to the names that we're giving them. That's the purpose of the name. Whether it's an ancestor or whether it's biblical, whatever it is, but we're hoping that they will live up to the name. So it's hard enough to live up to one name. I think we all recognize that. But we hope they'll live up to many names if we give them many names. I think in the case of Moshe, for example, and certainly in the case of Yisrael, the Torah itself is giving the names. Because the Torah is telling us there was this aspect, there was that aspect, there was this aspect, different names that are, they weren't necessarily called those names by their friends.
Not only really the same thing, but how many names are there of God?
How many what?
Names of God.
Yeah, a lot of names of God. Yeah. Now with God, any name that he has that we know him by is never going to be his essence. Because we can't possibly know God's essence. That's definitive. That's by definition. God being the creator and us being created, a created being can't possibly understand the essence of the one that created him. However, we know God by his actions. We know God by the way he treats the world, by the way he interacts with the world. That's how we know him. So the names of God connote different ways that God relates to the world. So we have different names, for example, that connote mercy. We use those names when God is acting with the world in a merciful way. Then we have other names that connote judgment, which is used by the Torah when God is judging the world. And so they have these different names, and each one has a different connotation. But you're right. There also we have many names of God.
You have infinite names. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I said, God himself is infinite. But the way he interacts with us is not necessarily infinite, because we're not infinite. So therefore, it's going to be limited to some extent, whatever that means. I mean, this is where we get into an arena that's, you know, beyond us. What does it mean, God? We talked about this way back in the beginning. Right. Okay. So Lot is taken. Avram saves Lot along with the rest of the people of Sodom. Now, so we have a lot about Lot. Up until really the end of chapter 14, Lot's name has come up regularly all the way since the end of chapter 11, since the end of Parshas Noach. Traveling with Avram, coming to Canaan, going to Egypt, coming back from Egypt, the separation with Avram, the war between the four kings and the five kings. Lot is part of the story. Even though he's separate from Avram and Sarah at this point, but he's very much part of the story. At this point with chapter 15, Perek Tes Vav, we take a break from Lot. We don't hear about Lot for a while. We don't hear about Lot until that fateful destruction of Sodom. We don't hear about Lot because Lot has fallen off the face of history. He's become insignificant. Until here, until this point, Lot is still very significant. He goes to Sodom. When he goes to Sodom, he has separated himself from Avram by his actions, by his deciding that he's going to take control of the land of Canaan at this point, deciding that he's going to do what he's going to do. He now has moved away from Avraham. The four kings come, and they take Lot in order to get Avram to chase after Lot. And Avram does. And Avram defeats the four kings. We talked about how did he defeat the four kings? Miraculously. He takes a very small army of 318 men, and just the 318 men, and some say that the 318 is really only one person. Because Eliezer, Avram's trusted slave, the gematria, the numerical value of Eliezer is 318. So some say it was just one other person, just the two of them, Avram and Eliezer. And they go, and they fight with the four kings, and they miraculously defeat the four kings. That's the story. The Medrash says they were able to pick up dust and throw it, and the dust would turn into spears and arrows, and it would kill the enemy. Their spears and arrows, they would shoot at Avram and his men, and they would turn into dust and just scatter, and it wouldn't hurt them. And so he miraculously defeats them, brings them all back. Now, you're Lot. Lot was captured along with everybody else in Sodom and Amorah. Sodom and Amorah were very wealthy cities. Very wealthy cities. incredibly wealthy cities. And here, they've been decimated. All the spoils have been taken. The people have been taken as slaves. Everything, they're gone. The whole cities have been wiped clean. Avram chases down the four kings, kills out the four kings and their armies, returns all of the captives, all of the wealth, back in business. Sodom is now back where it was before. Lot. Lot had been with Avraham. The rest of the people of Sodom had never been with Avraham. The rest of the people of Sodom, they may have seen the miracles, and like everybody else, you see a miracle, it affects you for a short time, and it wears off. There was no expectation that the people of Sodom would take these miracles to heart. But Lot is the one who had been so close to Abraham. He had been on the cusp of being part of that special nation, who we are. Lot, unfortunately, is interested in materialism, is interested in the land of Israel before it really is his. He has to separate from Avram. And he actually gets as far as Sodom in his deterioration. But God brings an enemy. Sodom is wiped clean. God brings Avraham, thinking from Lot's perspective. Lot is being spirited away by these marauding armies. Everything he had is gone. What does he have to look forward to? He has to look forward to a life of slavery. Forget material wealth. He has no material wealth anymore. It's all gone. It's all been taken. He's been taken alive. He's going to be a slave in somebody's home. He's going to have to do slave labor from now until he dies. And his uncle and brother-in-law, Avram, comes and unbelievably defeats these four armies, almost single-handedly. Incredible. Lot is saved. Everything is saved. Now we go back to Sodom. What message is God sending Lot? Lot! Don't go back. More than that, Lot, do you see what you were close to? Look what happened over here. You see the miracles that Avraham had with his slave Eliezer? You could have been by Avraham's side. You could have been the one throwing that dust turning into arrows. And when the arrows come at you, it turns into dust. You could have been part of this. You were part of this. Lot, wake up. Smell a coffee. This is where your destiny should be. Are you ready to return? This was the final test for Lot. And Lot failed. Lot did not leave Sodom. Lot comes back with everybody else, says, thank you, Abraham. That was wonderful. And then goes back to the life of greed and materialism, which was the hallmark of Sodom. And does not take the lesson to heart. And as a result, from this point on, Lot falls off the face of history. He's no longer mentioned until that fateful time that he's saved. Because there still is, within Lot, that genealogy of greatness. It's still there. And that has to get back to the Jewish people. And so Lot does have to be saved from the destruction of Sodom. And we have to have the incident and the episode with his daughters, which is going to bring about Ruth, because that has to eventually get back to the Jewish people. Because of that, there is that in Lot. So we do have to come back to Lot later. But Lot as a person, not Lot's descendants, but Lot, who he is, he's irrelevant. We don't need him anymore. He has turned his back on Hashem and on Avram. He has not chosen to take the lesson to heart. It's an incredible thing. He was given a second chance. Had he renounced his association with Sodom at this point and said, Avraham, I made a mistake. When I come back to your household, I will follow in your ways, and that will be that. Lot still had that chance to come back and be part of the center of history, to be part of the Jewish people, to be part of the chosen people of Hashem, Lot and his descendants. But instead, he turns his back. And therefore, Lot is written off. We still need him later because his descendants are still significant. We have to get his daughters back into the Jewish people at some point in the future of history. But here, from here on in, starting with 15, Lot is out.
Yeah. But essentially, everyone needs to get back in. I mean, are those original souls or pieces of them?
You want to know, where do people eventually fit in? Of course, the everybody has a place. And there is everybody does eventually have to get back to Hashem. But what position are you in? If you're part of the Jewish people, you're the center. You're the main cause. You're the middle of that wheel. Everything else is a spoke. Lot could have been in the middle. That's the point I'm making. Lot is no worse than the rest of the world. But now he's a non-Jew like anybody else. And so he's not in the centrality of it all. He could have been in that main section, which means the part that's closest to Hashem.
I don't just mean Lot. I mean, there are plenty of parts that... Is it going to take till somehow each one of those souls come back?
Yeah, we hope that we are moving closer and closer to it. That's what we're hoping. Remember that those who don't know any better are not held accountable. A person who was brought up with nothing and knows nothing, then they're accountable. But we have to make the right choices.
My argument, our midrash helps us to understand the parsha or whatever. Okay. The midrash that talks about that Avram was punished really for bringing, for having duty. Where do they get these? What's the lesson?
Okay. The Medrash is part of Torah Sheba'al Peh, part of the oral law. And the Medrash was given to Moshe at Har Sinai along with the written law. That's what the Medrash is. The Medrash is part of the Talmud.
And that's supposed to be explaining something.
That's right. That's right.
So that explains if you're studying you.
That's why you need to know. That's why you need. Well, that's why you need to know the totality of it all. Reading just the verses only gets you the notes. It doesn't get you everything until you also see the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law. When we speak in this setting, we're incorporating as much of that as we can into this particular talk. But it's vast, and so some of it we understand, some of it we don't. There's a lot of Torah that we don't understand. We do the best we can with what we are able to. Yeah, but we can discuss that a little bit further about making use of the people who are learning. But that's a separate discussion. So, as I said, we do have to come back to Lot, and we have another few minutes. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut this a little bit short because I don't want to get into another subject with the few people that we have here. Everybody else is missing out. But the we are going to come back to Lot when we get to the destruction of Sodom and then his descendants and the whole how Rus gets back into the Jewish people. And we are going to do that before Shavuos, because that's when it's really important. We have to know about Shavuos, because that's when we read the book of Rus on Shavuos. But at this point, we've gotten to where we wanted to get to this evening with Lot, which is at this point where he has turned his back and he's now off. The next thing we have to do, I don't even know if I want to tie myself down to necessarily what's going to be next week. But we have not really discussed the Bris Ben HaBesarim, the covenant between Hashem and Avraham. We didn't really talk about that in depth. We have that, and we also have, of course, the whole episode of Sarah and Hagar and Yishmael, which everybody wants to know about that. And the relevance to today, of course. So that we also have to discuss with Avraham. So we have some things to discuss before we even get to the discussion of Sodom. The discussion of Sodom is linked to the Bris and the birth of Yitzchak, etc. So that's going to be a whole separate discussion. So we're in, as we said, we're going through different strands, different threads of Avraham. And when we come back next week, we will continue with this.